Hello, world. This is Elizabeth.
And this is Kara.
And you're listening to...
In Transit, Two Triathletes Take on the World.
We are back and better than ever.
Yes, and...
Same face on.
We're trying to really stick with this and keep shows coming out, because we don't want to disappoint our listeners. We appreciate you guys. So,
Kara, I have to say, I've been keeping up your blog, and you've got a great blog going.
Oh, really?
I enjoyed it. I had to read. I couldn't stop.
Oh, really? I feel like I haven't even... Yeah. Well, actually, I did put a new post up today. Have you looked at it today? Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it today. But if anyone else wants to read Kara's blog, it is trycoup.blogspot.com. And it's T-R-I-C-O-U-P,
try yep.
to. Mine, however, is the last one I posted was from January 2007.
Nice.
So mine's a little not too up to date.
Yeah. Hey, did you notice, too, that I changed my format, or my, like, layout, or whatever you call it?
Yeah, I did, and I really like that you have the question option for the, which Ironman to do.
Oh, yeah. I know, I figured out, I don't even remember how I figured out how to do that, but I was like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to have a poll on my page. But yeah, it's been changed for a while, but I didn't think you saw it back when I changed
it.
But anyway, cool. So yeah, I'm trying to keep up with things in my life.
What's going on injury-wise for those who don't read your blog?
Okay, so I think on the last show, I talked about how I have this knee injury, and I don't remember if I said what my diagnosis was, but...
No, it wasn't.
I didn't say yet? Okay.
Diagnosis, no.
So I finally got a diagnosis, and it is my IT band, iliotibial band. It's like this band that connects from your knee to your hip, and basically,
yeah.
I guess it gets, like, tight or kind of irritated, and it rubs back and forth, and, like, there's a lot of friction, and that's where it causes the pain, like, either in your hip or your knee, but for me, it was the knee. And then he also thought I might have a little bit of patellar femoral syndrome, which is, like, kind of this deep knee pain. But the reason that happens is when you have an imbalance in, like, the strength of your muscles that around your knee, and so your kneecap, like, kind of goes to one side or the other. Like, it doesn't stay in line, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, basically, he prescribed me PT, and so I've gone twice, and she gave me a bunch of exercises to do, like, both stretching and strengthening. And I went again today, and I'm happy to say that I finally got clearance to start running again. I'm, like, so excited. Yeah, I haven't run yet because, well, I just got that clearance today. But basically, she said to take it easy, you know, like, just do a little bit, see how you feel, and then work your way up. Just use common sense, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited.
You know that is my identical diagnosis in 2005. Identical.
Oh, really?
Like, even... Patellar and IT band.
Really?
Yep. Huh. Identical, yep. And I went to a sports medicine doctor,
mm-hmm.
and he suggested, well, he was like, my son is a marathoner, so he's like, I know that you're addicted to running.
Yeah.
He said, I completely understand this, but he said, my son also had this problem, and with your condition, the condition that you're in now, he was like, I would tell you not to run another mile.
Huh.
And I was like, really? And so he suggested PT, of course,
yeah.
And then also rollerblading.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Wait, mm-hmm. you mean not to run another mile just, like, until you got healed or ever?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. He's like,
okay.
And I was like, well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and also just for those who haven't been listening to or haven't been updated, I haven't run since December 30th. So I've been out, I haven't run for like 3 months. And, I've been taking it very seriously because the last thing I want is to screw something up and not be able to, race this season, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm going to take her advice seriously and take it easy. I'll probably start out with maybe a mile or two at an easy pace and then, you know, see how I feel after and probably the next day. And if I'm feeling okay, then I'll just work my way up a little bit at a time. But I do have a trail race, a 10K trail race I'm registered for that's at the end of April. so I have a little...
Oh, you should be okay by...
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
10 miles by then, I think, right?
Yeah, 10K, so it's not even... It's 6.2 miles.
So oh, good. Oh,
yeah.
good. Okay.
So I'm thinking I should be good to go by then, as long as when I run, it's not making it worse or something, so... And of course...
Yeah, but...
And
you're smart enough to walk when they start hurting and all that stuff, too.
I have to say, though... You must be a lot smarter than I am or something, because you know how you said you went to a sports medicine doctor? I really wish I would have started at the sports medicine doctor instead of going to... What I had to do was I had to go to my primary care physician. She had to refer me to an orthopedist. Then I had to go get two different MRIs, and then they referred me to a different orthopedist, and then I finally went to PT. And so that's why I've been out so long, but I feel, and I also, like, the physical therapist, she's nice enough, but I don't think she understands, I didn't feel like she connected with me as being an athlete, you know?
Yeah.
Because she was, when I told her I have this race coming up, she's like, oh, well, can you get a refund if you, like, if you're not able
oh,
to
no
do
way.
It or something? And I'm like, no.
Oh, wow.
And so, I mean, she's just kind of clueless about it. And I don't know. And she was like, well, it isn't the end of the world if you can't do that race. Is it, this isn't like, you know, I don't know. She basically was trying to make sure I wasn't going to do it no matter if I was hurting or not, kind of thing, you know, and I'm like, yeah, it's not life or death, but at the same time, I was disappointed with how she didn't really get it, you know? So, long story short, I think if this happens again and I have some kind of sports injury, I'm just going to go directly to the sports medicine doctor, and even if I had to pay out of pocket instead of going through insurance, because it's so much nicer to have someone who can really understand what you do and why it's important to you. So
I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So anyway,
I remember as far as like anatomy and physiology goes, like I can't. I'm pretty sure this is right, but like your IT bands, like this big fascia bands, like tensor fascia latae, from what I remember, and it's basically just this sheen, like super mega thin, but really resilient band that goes from your hip to your knee. And that, man, when you hurt that, you hurt it. Oh, gosh, it hurts so bad.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah, how I thought, I was almost hoping that I had torn something, you know, because I was like, oh, they're going to do this MRI, it's going to be a tear, and they're going to go in and fix it, and then I'll be fine. But, like, when it's something that's not a tear, and you just... Yeah, it's just like an ongoing thing, and you have to just work it out. It's almost worse, I feel, you know. But yeah, it's also frustrating because, well, this is the first time I've really been injured to where I had to just stop altogether. So
yeah,
but I guess it, you know, it's gonna happen to the best of us, no matter how precautious we try to be. So anyway,
So, have you been swimming or biking or anything?
Yeah, I've been swimming a lot. I actually just swam tonight, and I've been doing a lot of cycling, too, because that doesn't bother it at all. And so I'll finally be able to get back to running, which will be nice to add that to the mix.
Well, cool. So. Good. Oh, I have interesting that biking doesn't hurt you, because I couldn't press down with my leg at all. Like, any pressing down or going downstairs, I was awful.
You know what though? I didn't bike for probably at least a month because I waited. It took me that long to finally see an orthopedist, which is ridiculous anyway. And so I was afraid. Yes. I was afraid to do it until I saw someone, and then then he said to go ahead as long as it didn't hurt it, and it didn't. But maybe that month of resting made the difference too. I don't know. But
man, you must have been going stir crazy.
I was, yeah, because all I was doing for, like, at least a month, like, the whole month of January was swimming. That's it. And, well, and then and then finally I could start cycling and doing the elliptical. So I've been doing elliptical a lot also to try to, like, keep up my cardio or whatever. Oh, I have a question for you, though. So when you went to the sports medicine doctor, did you feel like they took like a holistic view of what was going on? Like, did they look at your running shoes and like watch how you walked or that kind of thing?
I have never been more sure of that than this doctor. Yes. Well, first of all, he's a DO, so yes,
that's good.
Yeah. He wasn't an MD, and so DOs always take a holistic perspective on everything anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, I could comfortably say that a DO would holistically look at someone like that over an MD. Not mm-hmm. that I'm partial. I am partial to DOs or MDs, but most definitely I did, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, see that...
And he was an athlete, too, so...
That's really good, yeah. That was another thing I was disappointed in this whole experience. No one at any point ever looked at, like, the wear patterns on my shoes. I, like, purposely wore my running shoes so they could do that, you know. No one looked at, no one meaning, like, the three different doctors I went to and the physical therapist. So, like, I've seen, like, four different people. No one looked at how I walk or how I run or anything. The only thing that he did was see how I stand.
Yeah, they did that to me, too. That's when I found out, actually, yeah, they put me on a treadmill.
Yeah, like, yeah, you'd think, to me, it would make more sense to do that, because, yeah, whatever they're doing, like, having me do this PT and stuff, well, if the source of the problem is, like, how my feet, like, you know, how I run, or if I have the wrong shoes or something, you'd think that they would want to fix that so it wouldn't just happen again. But
right. Well, that's when I found out that I have short leg syndrome, because one of my legs is, I think they said a quarter of an inch. Typically, they said 85 or something huge percent like that of all Americans have short leg syndrome, but they said typically it's like an eighth of an inch off. But they said mine's about a quarter of an inch. So that's what happened with mine, because I've got one leg stretching more than the other, so which explains. And I'm marathon training at that point, and so after running so many miles, that quarter of an inch takes a toll on the body. So that's when I got a lift in my shoe.
Oh, okay, so you did get an orthotic, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what, the last orthopedist I saw did say that I may eventually need an orthotic, like if when I start running again, it's still not working or whatever, so.
Right.
But I do go back to see him again, like, next week, so, and I'm glad that I'll be able to run a couple times before that so I can give him feedback about that, but.
Yeah, good.
I don't know. This whole process is just craziness, but anyway.
Injuries suck. Speaking of injuries, get a load of this.
What?
I have two broken ribs. Yay!
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, Lord. It was so stupid. I was goofing around, and I fell. It sounds strange, but I fell on top of a wooden chair, like the back part of a chair that was wood.
Yeah.
And, like, fell on them, on the back of the chair, and just split two of my ribs. I mean, talk about suck.
Painful,
The worst pain. Okay, I've broken my ankle before, and that really, really, really hurt. But this was... And it was worse than that.
Man, crazy. So,
yeah.
It does it hurt, like, when you breathe or when you sleep?
It hurts to breathe, it hurts to sleep, it hurts to... Okay, sneezing? Oh my gosh, I've never actually, in the morning, woken up and prayed that for the day for me to not sneeze. Like, Lord, please don't let me sneeze today. Like, it is so, I can't cough, like, I can't... It's just, I can't lay down, I can't lay flat, I can't sit up, I can't sit down. Like, it's terrible, the worst pain ever. But I'm, like, this is the end of my fifth week right now, so it's so much better, but it's still really, really painful. But I couldn't do anything. So I finally went running for the first time, but, it was fine, actually, so I think I'm going to start running more.
Yeah.
Actually.
Well, when you... when you run, can you, like, tape it or something so it doesn't move? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, wrapping is so awesome. Wow. It feels so much better when you wrap it, but it hurts so bad unwrapping it. So I was like, what do I do? And the longer it was wrapped, the more it hurt when I unwrapped it. It was just terrible.
Yeah.
There was no winning with this one.
How long ago was that?
5 weeks.
How long does it take for ribs to heal? I don't even know.
It takes anywhere from like 6 to 3 months. 6 weeks to 3 months. I mean,
Ooh. Yeah. All right. Well, let's hope it's the shorter end of that.
Yeah, I think it is, actually. I'm just starting to feel stiff now, but, like, I sat down today and I didn't want to kill myself, so it was good.
That's really good.
Yeah. But it's getting a lot better. Yeah.
Good, man.
So anyway, so yeah.
Well, yeah, so hopefully we'll both be back in business pretty soon, huh?
I'm like an old person.
I know.
Anyway. It's really funny, too, because I teach classes, and one of the classes that I teach is CPR. And so I can't do anything in class. I can't press on anything. And so I'm like, okay, guys, this is how you do it. Just pretend like I'm doing this.
Nice.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. But anyway.
Oh, well, should.
Okay, so that's my try 101. I don't know about you.
Yeah, the only other thing I think that's it, because I think last show we talked about our race schedules, so right now I'm just trying to start slowly getting back into running and then go from there, so things are good.
Back on. It is time for this show's Stoked and Stellar, and we couldn't really find an item that we were stoked about this time, but Kara did come across something that we got a good laugh about. So,
right. Yeah, so I'm on this email list of a bunch of cyclists, and so someone passed this around. It's actually a couple different groups that are on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, you could probably look these up, but they're pretty funny. There's two different groups. One of them's the American cyclists, and the other is Eurocyclists, so they both have official codes of conduct, and they're hilarious. Like, let me just read a few of these. Okay, so for the official rules of the Eurocyclists, cycling shoes must contain at least 80% white. The following exceptions apply. Color combinations such as World Cup stripes or Olympic gold where title has been earned. Shoes are custom made for specific riders by companies endorsed by this group. These shoes will be accessible to the particular cyclist only and shall follow the preceding rules. And then the American one says, cycling shoes are required. Never show up to a race or group ride with tennis shoes.
You know what? That makes me think of something.
Okay.
And this is totally random. I've never even thought about this, but I wonder what the rules are. Are you still wearing the same cycling shoes that the blue ones that you have?
Yeah, they're the same ones I've always had. Yep.
How often do people need to switch out riding shoes?
I don't know. I guess just, well, actually, I've replaced the cleats on them, but I haven't replaced the shoes. Yeah. I guess I'm planning on wearing them until they just totally wear out, because, like, the Velcro might wear out or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if the cleats wear out, you can change them. So, I mean, I'm in no big hurry to get new ones.
Right. Huh. I wonder if there's some kind of, like, gold standard. Anyway, okay, go ahead.
Okay. Like, after you have so many miles or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, here's another one. All wheels shall be equipped with tubulars, regardless of your ability in gluing them. And then the American one says, tubulars suck. Clinchers should be used in the events of training rides. Tubulars may be used in the case of time trials, though. And then we have for Euro, ridiculously stylish eyewear, see endorsed products list. And they do have this whole list of endorsed products. Is to be worn at all time without exception. Glasses are to be worn over helmet straps at all times. And then the American one says, not everyone has $100 to $250 to spend on eyewear. If you spend that much money on glasses, then you need to get a life.
Okay, guilty. I'm guilty.
Oh, here's another one. This is really good, too. Okay, so the Eurocyclist, Hair shall be kept neatly short, and matching helmet shall be worn, again with prominent logo placement. Under no circumstances shall a clashing helmet color be worn with your Euro kit. Helmets are not to be worn when venturing indoors at any time. It is, however, acceptable to wear your helmet while outdoors on a patio. See rule 34. I'll have to look at that one. And then the American says, who the hell cares what your hair looks like? You're going to be wearing a helmet on training rides, required, and a hat on the podium. Anyway, so yeah, these are just hilarious. I don't know. But I might.
Yeah, those are pretty stellar.
Yeah. But some of the stuff is so funny. Like, it's so true, though. Like, one of the things it talks about how the Europeans, like, you must have white handlebar tape. Like, they always use white handlebar tape. If you look through a lot of the pictures, you know? And then, but then the Americans say, like, white handlebar tape is the dumbest thing to buy if you're not a pro. Have fun washing it after every ride unless you want to turn it gray and or brownish black.
Have fun washing it. Exactly. Yeah, no shit. I would never use white. Oh, whatever.
Yeah. But they do, though.
Like, have you ever thought about that? But yeah, I guess you're right. I'm going to go Google it right now.
Yeah. Oh, check this one out. Okay. All stems must be a minimum of 120 millimeters and a rise of no higher than negative 10 degrees. Stems shall be positioned no more than 0.5 centimeters above the top of the head tube. All stems shall always be oversized, made out of aluminum, and airbrushed in kit frame colors. And then the Americans say, how can you let someone tell you that you need a certain stem length? Some people don't need 120 stem. But anyway, yeah, these are good. So anyway, I just thought people would get a kick out of that.
Okay, yes, I think those are very stellar.
I have another one. I have another stoked and stellar thing.
Oh, okay. What's that?
Okay. Well, it's kind of late now, but it still could be useful. So this is, as many of you may know, I commute to work, like, many days out of the week, as long as it's not like pouring rain or something. And definitely it's better now that the time has changed, but I used to have to ride in the dark home a lot. And so I have a headlamp that I bought, a bike headlight that I bought. That's really a really strong one. That's good. But in case it runs out of juice or whatever, I usually bring my headlamp with me as a backup. And I find that, like, just a regular headlamp that you would use for camping or whatever. And it actually works really well. I had to use it once, and it was good. I mean, it definitely wasn't as good as my headlight, but I think that's a good thing to bring with you, just if you don't want to buy a second light as a backup. So hopefully you have a headlamp anyway, because only cool, you know, all the cool people have headlamps already.
Yeah.
So I'm stoked about that too. Okay, it's time for the Bon Voyage trip tip, and I have a couple things that I could share. The first thing is, for traveling, I find a couple things that I use all the time. And maybe these are things that you already know, but just in case you're wanting to plan a trip, definitely look into travel forums. And one of the forums I really like is the Lonely Planet Thorn Tree. If you just search, Google that, Thorn Tree, Lonely Planet, it'll come up, and you can look under, like, no matter where you're planning on going, basically there's a thread for that place, you know, like whatever country or area or whatever. And you can, there's a lot of good info already on there, or you can post questions and people seem to be pretty good about answering with their recommendations and experience and stuff. So I feel like that work, that's a lot. I mean, guidebooks are really good too, but this can give you more current information and more, of course, don't take it like, I mean, some people might be extreme in what they post. They might say, like, don't go here, you know, but, take it all in, the good and the bad, and then so you can make your decision on what to do and what not to do and where to go or what
it's
to see.
It's called Lonely Planet. What's it called?
Thorn Tree. Like
T-H-O-R-N.
Yep. Thorn Tree.
Okay, cool. That's good. That's good.
Okay, so, yeah, that's a good thing if you're traveling. And then another thing I have, it's kind of like an oddball thing. I don't know if it actually fits in this category very well, but sort of maybe it does. Okay, it's uses for swim caps. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I've seen one of these things before. Okay, awesome. Go ahead.
Well, I only have two ideas, but you might have more. But you know how, okay, if you've done any number of races, triathlons or whatever, you probably have started a little collection of swim caps. and you know, like, you how many swim caps do you really need, you know? So,
right,
but I tend to keep mine, you know, I guess. It's always good to have backups or whatever. But here's a couple ideas of things you can do with your extra swim caps. The first thing is to use it as a seat cover for your bike, like if it's raining or something, so you can protect it from the wetness. And you can either do that at a race, or if you're like a commuter or something and your bike is parked outside, you can just put the swim cap over it. And then
nice.
The second thing is to use it as like a jar opener in the kitchen to grip.
That is a good idea.
Yeah, to grip your grip your jar. And actually that idea came from one of the people in my triathlon club. Because we have a forum for my triathlon club, and someone posted that, and I was like, that's a cool idea. I want to mention that on the show. So, yeah. I don't know if you... Do you know any other ones?
Oh, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I do have a fun fact about swim caps.
Okay.
They were the very first swim caps, you know, the old school ones with the chin straps?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Those were invented in the 1920s.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Were they? What were they made out of then?
Latex.
They were?
Yep.
Were there any made out of like leather?
Cloth or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think so. But it's according to answers.com, I think is where I got that information. They were in the 1920s. Were made of latex.
Excellent.
Yep. Cool. Rubberized fabric. Yep.
So I don't know, yeah, so like I said, I don't know if that's exactly a trip tip, but you could use it when you go somewhere, I suppose.
I really like the seat cover idea, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I guess that could be used for a lot, I mean, just anything that you want to keep waterproof, or I mean, it could even be, like, to protect your camera or something, you know?
Yeah, no kidding, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Excellent. Good tips, good tips, I like it. Right on. So that's a good Bon Voyage trip tips of the show.
All right. It's time for the No Name Nutrition segment. Let's go.
I forgot that's what we named it.
Yeah.
We haven't done one of these in a while, but I know it's starting to get warmer now across America, and everyone's kind of starting to worry about what they're eating because swimsuit season's right around the corner. Well, this is 6 easy tips for how to reduce salt in your diet.
Okay.
I thought these are pretty good tips, too, because you always watch your sodium intake, you know, for health reasons, cholesterol, blah, blah, blah. So here's a couple. Well, 6 of them. All right. Use fresh ingredients over processed foods whenever you can. Of course, that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is use convenience foods wisely. So if you have to, instead of like fresh vegetables like broccoli or whatever, or green beans, that, of course, is the best way to go because those don't have salt added to them.
Right.
But if you do have to use convenience foods, then opt for frozen foods over canned foods.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are in some place where you want an odd vegetable that only comes in cans, then choose the ones that are low in sodium or no salt added. So those are good. Mm.
Yep.
And one rule, and I swear everyone's so guilty of doing this, and it's so funny, don't add it if you can't taste it. And so, like, when people add salt to boiling water for, like, their pasta and potatoes and stuff, there's no reason to do that at all. So
yeah,
try
you
to
know,
avoid doing that.
I do that sometimes, and I think this is probably totally – I've never really thought about why I do it. I think it's just because my mom always did it. But I always thought – it probably didn't even make any sense – that it helped to make your water boil faster.
No, okay, that is, okay, I knew you were going to say
that's
that.
That's a
this
myth.
Funny, okay. It is a myth, yes, 100% of
you
the
know,
time.
And that's why I
stuff
do...
that doesn't have oil or salt added to it, plain water will boil faster than sodium chloride water.
Oh. Period. Yeah, you know, that's why I only do it intermittently, because I'm like, you know, this probably doesn't even do anything.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one is measure. Always use measuring spoons if it is required in the diet or whatever. And like if it says 1/8 of a teaspoon, then use like if it's a pinch or salt to taste, then that's usually about 1/8 of a teaspoon. So,
yeah, that's good.
Just so you know, and a lot of it's always like, oh, just add salt to taste. That's typically like 1/8 of a teaspoon. Okay. Here's a really good one. I really like this one. Distract your palate. Use like acidic flavors like lemons or limes or vinegars. And those things can actually bring out the taste in food a lot better than salt. So like sprinkle fresh grated lemon zest or something instead of salt. I think people should try that. It's actually a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. And then, of course, boost your vegetables' natural flavor. A lot of people think that a lot of vegetables are bitter, so they tend to target lots of foods and then just add salt in the recipes, you know?
Yeah.
But instead of reaching for the salt shaker to counteract, like, a vegetable's bitterness, then you can actually grill vegetables instead of, like, boiling them or whatever. Because grilling actually brings out the natural sweetness of the vegetable and... so it brings up the sugars, and so you don't have to add salt that way.
That's good.
So,
yeah,
grill your vegetables if you're worried about them being bitter.
Cool.
So there's six nutrition tips on ways to cut your sodium out of your diet, or cut down on that anyway.
Excellent. I have a few things about nutrition, too. Okay,
okay.
So my first thing is I've been eating quinoa lately.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, and I have this new concoction that I've come up with that I've been eating for lunch, like, every day.
Okay.
Because I've been trying to bring my lunch to work, too, so I won't be tempted to... well, let me give you the background or whatever. We have, by where I work, there's, like, all these cart vendors that are really actually pretty good. They're, like, any kind of cart food you would want, like, not just, like, hot dogs and stuff. They have, like... Thai, Vietnamese, Chinese,
ooh.
Korean, there's a sushi cart, there's, like, Indian, you know, they're, like, really good stuff, right? But at the
same... that sounds good.
At the same time, they're not exactly, like, the healthiest thing, and they give you, like, really big servings, too. So, plus, I mean, they're not super expensive, but plus I'm trying to just, you know... cut down on it, because, like, it even if it's, like, $5 a day, that's, like, that adds up over time, so I'm trying to...
Yeah, it's $100 a month, yeah.
I'm just trying to be more frugal. So, anyway, and just to be healthier, too, but I've come up with this concoction of, this probably sounds weird, but here's what I've been eating. Quinoa, chicken, bean sprouts, and kimchi, all mixed together.
I can see quinoa and kimchi together. And bean sprouts?
Yeah, sprouts.
Really?
Sprouts. Yeah. And
I can imagine bean sprouts and quinoa.
Well, the reason I had that idea was because when I get Korean food, they put sprouts in it a lot. And they use rice, though, to eat it with, but I figured I'd just replacing the rice with the quinoa.
Do you boil your quinoa in, like, broth or anything?
No, just water. Because I use the kimchi, because you can buy kimchi, like, in the produce section of your store, and I use that as, like, the flavoring. And
that's
then,
a good idea.
And I use, I usually add red pepper, like, powder, like, instead of black pepper, you know, like, red pepper powder, and, and I just, and maybe a little bit of salt, and That's it. I mean, maybe it sounds like gross, but I like it. I don't know.
That actually sounds really good. I'm just thrown off by the bean sprouts. Like, I love bean sprouts, but I can't imagine them.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I don't know that I've ever had them hot.
They're more like, they're like more texture than anything. They don't have a lot of flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also, the last batch I made, I added onion, too, white onion.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Do you eat it cold or hot?
Hot.
Okay, I'm going to totally try that this week. If anybody has a good recipe that's easy like that, let us know. You can actually call our hotline and leave us a message under 2 minutes. It's 920-482-4822.
Yep. And the thing about it that I like is that it'll last, like, the whole week for me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, a lot of the recipes I've seen for quinoa use a lot of really fresh, like, veggies and stuff that I'm afraid, like, since it's just me, I'm afraid it'll go bad before I can eat it all.
Plus, kimchi you can keep for years.
Kimchi is, like, better if you ferment it, you know?
It is fermented, so
you're,
how much more rotten can it get?
Exactly. So, yeah. But anyway.
Oh, man, that sounds really good. I'm excited to try that.
Yeah.
Okay, if anybody really has a quinoa recipe or just has an idea for quinoa, I love that. I could eat it every single day.
Yeah. Oh, and
so send us a recipe.
I found red quinoa also. That's really good.
Shut your face. Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. Like, so there's
what?
This.
What?
Yeah, it's like red and it has a little. It has a little more flavor to it, but it's called red quinoa. I mean, it doesn't.
Oh.
It's just like a different variation on quinoa or whatever, but it's definitely quinoa. It's just called red quinoa.
Oh my gosh, I'm totally going to have to seek it out because I can't believe I've never heard of it.
I just got it at the grocery store. But, I like it too because it. Like, the recipe I just told you, when I use the red quinoa, it makes it look really funky.
I was going to say that would make your food look totally pretty.
Yeah.
Ooh, oh my gosh. What kind of grocery store did you have in Connecticut?
I have to go, to get the quinoa, I have to go to this, like, little kind of gourmet grocery store.
Yeah, market, yeah.
Yeah, like a smaller, like, fine foods market, but then the other stuff I just get at the regular, it's called Stop and Shop. It's like it's like Kroger-ish or whatever you're...
Okay. Yeah.
Or, yeah, let's see, the equivalent, the Midwest, it would be like, in Iowa, would be like Hy-Vee, and then in Texas, it'd be like Kroger, or...
Calm Sun.
Yeah, and then here, it's Stop and Shop, so, yeah.
And here, you've got nothing but Walmart because I live in the hometown of Walmart. So
yeah, well, yeah. Where do you get your quinoa? Do they have like a health food store or like a?
Yeah, there's a natural food store.
Natural food.
It's called Ozark Natural Foods. Mm-hmm. It is awesome. I love that place. I mean, you know, it's no Whole Foods, but for the small scale that we're here, that they have it here, it's very comparable to Whole Foods. I love it.
I miss having a Whole Foods, and I miss Central Market too.
Yeah. Oh, Central Market, man! I don't even get me started. Don't get me started. I miss those two things so much. Aw, Texas.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so yeah, that's a pretty interesting nutrition section.
I have more.
Oh, really?
Hang on. Yeah, I have something else, but this is more. It's a story that I found, but it is on Trifuel. I'm bringing this up because I want your opinion on it, basically, because I know you know more about nutrition than me. It's this stuff about, I've heard this kind of thing before, but it's basically, this article is an article by Ben Greenfield in their health and nutrition section. It's set on Trifuel. It says things like, don't eat fruit with any other food. They're too acidic and likely to sit and ferment while slowing digestion of other foods. So use fruit as a snack served alone. Don't combine proteins and starchy carbohydrates. Only drink milk by itself. Don't add accessory fats to proteins like excessive butter or cream sauce. Don't consume starch and sugar foods together. And then eat predominantly protein-only or carbohydrate-only meals. For example, breakfast might be an egg omelet with turkey bacon or fruit smoothie with a banana. What do you think about that stuff? About the whole eating things separately, like eating protein separate from carbohydrates and that kind of thing?
I think This is solely my opinion on things, and it's based on just my education and what I know of nutrition and kind of the things I've compiled for myself. So this might be totally off the wall, and but this is what I think of one of you say that. I think food order makes sense to me. Like, as far as, like, what you should eat first and what you should eat last.
Like that makes sense to me. In the day kind of thing? Or
yeah, in during the day and during your meal.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
That makes sense to me. Just because of absorption rates and digestion. Like, that makes sense to me. But food combinations, I can't understand. I guess it's kind of the same idea, but, like, why would they say, besides the fact that it's just extra accessory fats, why wouldn't it be okay to add sauce to protein?
Yeah. Well, it's saying the reason for these is basically like it says digestion becomes impaired when you like combine these things because the foods can't fully digest in competing environments because they require different environments for complete digestion and absorption.
And
Saying that, like, eat it. I don't know, like, it doesn't say exactly, like, how long in between you need or whatever, but it's, I mean, I'm guessing it's suggesting, like, at least a couple hours if it's saying each meal should be, separate.
Like primarily protein or primarily carbohydrates.
Right.
See, I disagree with that completely. I totally disagree with that. And here's the reason why, because of that. If people actually do just eat carbohydrates for a meal or they just eat proteins for a meal, that has the potential to cause extreme heartburn in a lot of people.
Oh, really?
Like people who eat a huge amount of protein without carbohydrates typically have heartburn. And vice versa for that. So carbohydrates can tame down the whole concept of protein because your stomach overproduces acid whenever you're eating protein because it has to break down the meat and all that stuff.
Right.
So carbohydrates complement that and keep heartburn down, which is interesting that he would say eat primarily protein. I guess whatever primarily is, I don't know if that means three quarters of your meal or half or more definitive explanation.
Well, this is actually saying eat predominantly protein only or carbohydrate only meals.
No, I can strongly disagree with that, and I guess I would just have to read more and figure out what his reasoning for that is. But that is just destined for heartburn.
Well, my other complaint or main concern with it is how it would make your eating experience suck, you know? Like, I mean, like it says on here, it suggests, don't consume starch and sugar foods together, like jam on toast or honey on oatmeal. It's like, okay, so I'm going to just eat plain toast, you know? Like, it just ruins it's basically like a view on food as primarily just fuel and nothing else. Like, to me, food is like an experience and something a pleasureful experience, you know?
I agree completely. I'm going to stick some butter on my toast. I don't care who says what.
Yeah. What do you suggest for order if you're talking just about the order you eat it?
Well, of course, you want to start off your meals with your vegetables. And vegetables are, for those who don't know, vegetables are carbohydrates.
Right. Yeah.
So I always like to say fill it first on the green stuff, like salads and all that stuff, before you add, you know, the meats and all that stuff. But I think a balanced meal should include carbohydrates, proteins, and fats.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe I'm crazy, but I agree with you. I think food is an experience, and I like to eat. Jeez,
right.
I don't know. I don't want to just eat for fuel. I mean, I do, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Stuff like that bugs me. I don't like it when people are like, don't eat that. I think people should eat whatever they want within reason, you know.
Right. I have two other things. Sorry, this is going. I keep thinking of more nutrition things. Okay. One is, I've been eating Turkish breakfast lately.
Have you really? Yay!
Yeah.
I got, that's so funny. My old office in Dallas called me they wrote me an email the other day and said, all right, everybody here wants to be like you, so tell us again what you eat for breakfast.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah, I got 8 of the ladies at work eating Turkish breakfast, and they're they're so funny. They're like, we're starting the year off right, so they're all
That's
eating
cool.
Turkish breakfast now.
Yeah, let's tell them, Turkish breakfast is basically an egg, cucumbers, tomato, olives, cheese, and a piece of bread, and maybe with some honey or jam, like all fruit jam on it or whatever.
Yes.
And tea. You gotta have tea.
Mine's much more specific than that.
Oh, what's yours?
I have one additional thing to that tea. Mine is one piece of toast, no butter, like just plain toast.
Okay.
Half of a cucumber, one Roma tomato, 6 olives, 2 ounces of cheese, of whatever kind of cheese you want, and then of course, hot tea, and then I drink lime juice with mine.
Oh, I like that. Yep. I don't have the lime.
And the egg is hard boiled. It's a hard boiled
egg.
Right.
I'm specific too. Like I eat 1 ounce of cheese, 5 olives.
Oh, do you really?
And I have 6 slices of cucumber. And then I eat the grape tomatoes because they're a lot easier to deal with, I think, than...
Yeah.
Like the, well, and also right now I feel like I'm really picky about my tomatoes. I say it's because I'm from Iowa and I'm used to, like, farm stand tomatoes, you know,
yeah.
They're really good. And so I can't stand, like, flavorless tomatoes. And so right now the only tomatoes that look any good to me are the grape ones. So...
Yeah.
And
those would be convenient, though. That's a really convenient snack, too.
Yeah,
I never even thought about that.
And then,
how many of those do you eat?
Like, just a handful.
Okay.
Yeah, like a handful of those. And this summer when tomatoes are more in season, I'll probably switch to, like, Roma ones, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I only eat, like, one piece of toast and...
Yeah,
I just put like a tablespoon of honey on it and tea. Yep. But yeah, I really like it. And because before I was getting into this rut where I was like, okay, if you don't already know, I get into like these trends of eating the same thing. Like I'm really,
you
predictable.
Save it with food.
Like, well, I was so stuck in eating a bagel and cream cheese every morning. That's what I
eat. You were relentless with that, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I go to the bagel shop, and they know, they're like, the usual? I'm like, yep. So, I mean, you know that's bad. But I was feeling, it wouldn't keep me full that long, and I just felt like it wasn't the right way to start off the day, even though, I mean, it's not like that is a enormous amount of, it's not like I was eating some terrible thing, I guess, but
yeah.
I just feel like a Turkish breakfast is a little more balanced, and it actually keeps me full longer and more satisfied, so.
Isn't that amazing? You look at it, and you're like, there's no way, I'm going to be hungry. That's like rabbit food. I'm going to be starving in, like, an hour.
No,
and I never am. It keeps me filled forever.
It keeps you full, and I think it takes longer to eat, too. Like, you can take your time more, you know?
Yeah, it does.
And,
you're right.
And actually, the caloric content of all that is probably about equal to a bagel and cream cheese, which is crazy, you know, like for all the stuff from the Turkish breakfast. So
yeah, because you're getting great fats from the olives
and the egg.
Yeah.
Or not the egg, the cheese. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Good. Good. I'm glad you're eating that. That makes me happy.
I had one other question. I drink a lot of diet pop, you know, or I call it pop, you know, whatever you want to call it, but
you're so. Midwestern.
I know. And okay. I'm freaked out about the aspartame. What do you think about aspartame?
Oh, Lord. Okay.
There's such debate over whether it's really detrimental and like...
I have two things to say about it.
Okay, go ahead.
My first one is you're going to have to drink copious amounts of any diet drink in order for the outcome to be anything detrimental as far as like cancer goes.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my first thing to say about that.
Okay.
That would be the furthest thing from my mind.
Okay.
I wouldn't even worry about that. However, what I would say about it, any diet drink, you really shouldn't drink them unless you're eating a meal with them.
Oh, okay.
So, because what happens is your body, whenever you eat something, your body instinctively says, oh, okay, liver, let's stop making sugar now because, oh, we're eating. So now we don't have to worry about it because we're getting nutrients already.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is just because, well, your taste buds taste something in your mouth, tells your liver to shut off, to stop making sugar. And this is a very rough way to say this. But in actuality, after a few minutes, like 20 minutes or 30 minutes go by, your body's like, dude, I thought we just ate something. Or in actuality, you had zero calories.
Yeah.
So then your liver overproduces.
That makes sense.
I wouldn't drink diet anything unless you're eating a meal with it. That way you're not tricking your body and you are actually consuming calories at the same time. So you're not doing anything funky as far as your liver psychology goes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's
so
good.
That's my suggestion with that.
Like, and I've also heard, like, I'm not really worried about the cancer thing, but I've heard people think that, like, say that aspartame is a neurotoxin. And, like, it can cause, like, mood changes.
Recently heard that. I don't know anything about that, actually. I haven't read anything about that. But I've heard of that, too. I don't know.
And I'm just, like, I don't know. And, well, I don't know. I'm just up in the air about it. But at the same time, I don't want to start drinking, like, regular pop. And then I also, but I like it as a, I like the sweetness of it or whatever. I need to find something else to drink, I guess. That's a good replacement.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I would just say, I would say limit yourself to one a day or two a day, maybe. I don't know how much you drink. How many do you drink a day, do you think?
Maybe usually maybe three at the most.
Okay, yeah.
Because I usually drink one at work and then one at home. But I can find other things to drink, but I would drink like iced tea, for example, but I'm worried about the caffeine. I'm really neurotic about watching my caffeine intake because I really believe that if I don't first of all, I really believe that if you are hooked on caffeine, you totally crash. Like if you start your day with caffeine by 1 o'clock, you're gonna be like, I need more.
I totally believe that too, actually.
Yeah, and
I'm not to get decaf tea, yo.
Well, no, I have decaf hot teas. I guess I just need to get decaf iced tea kind of tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's an easy solution right there.
Yeah, because I would drink that totally, no problem. But I'm worried about caffeine. I like the benefit of using it while racing because if you drink it all the time, it's not going to have any effect. But if you don't drink it and then use it while you're racing, it really makes a difference, I think.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I remember because I didn't drink caffeine for years. And then even during the race, for some reason, during the race, I grabbed a caffeinated goo pack or hammer gel or something.
Right.
And I was zip, 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 zip. I was crazy.
Yeah.
It made a huge difference.
Yeah. So
but
I like,
it also messed with my nerves that day too. So.
Yeah. I like having that extra fuel or whatever you call it, boost. And I just feel better. I really feel better that I've eliminated caffeine from my diet. So.
Yeah. So you drink decaf or non-caffeinated diet what?
Diet Coke, or I drink ginger ale, diet ginger ale. It doesn't have caffeine.
Nice. You know, root beer doesn't have caffeine either, so you can drink diet root beer.
Okay, excellent. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all right, well, I think we should wrap it up, but...
I think so, too.
I have a good pump-up song for everyone.
Ooh,
and great. It is... Present of Future End by The Most Serene Republic, an indie band from Ontario, which I recently discovered, and I'm getting to see them this weekend at a show in Boston, so I'm really stoked about that, and I hope you enjoy the song.